The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
If you're about to go grass cutting for the first time this season, go gently.
Don't cut too low because the grass, ryegrass in particular, keeps its carbohydrate storage reserves in about the bottom 5 or 6 centimetres of the plant.
Lincolnshire Rural Support Network, LRSN, are celebrating their 25th anniversary. We'll see what's planned for the rest of the year. And we're looking at some shiny new stuff from last week's Pig and Poultry Fair.
What Leo allows us to do is actually have visibility of each single individual animal.
So they've come up with this system which uses technology which has been around for 50, 60 years, but it's been developed for use with straw.
AI technology that listens to the pigs from nursery through to finishing for signs of potential respiratory disease. So it's listening for coughing and other signs of respiratory disease, and also humidity and temperature.
Plus important agronomy advice, the market's weather, and the week's farming news.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Well, another busy week. Hope it's been good for you. Hello, I'm Steve Orchard. This is the Farming Programme podcast for Sunday, May 19th, 2024. In the news this week, at last week's second Downing Street Farm to Fork Summit, the Prime Minister promised a new index to track UK food security as part of a substantial package of support for farming. We'll hear from one who was there in a few minutes. The index highlights that currently the UK produces the equivalent of just 17% of the fruit and 55% of the vegetables that end up on British plates, significantly lagging behind meat, dairy and grains. Other support was announced for genetic improvement networks, English orchard growers, small abattoirs, a fund for the endemics disease scheme and a new grant worth up to £500,000 for hen housing being available to laying hen and pullet farmers in England. The proposed ban on live animal exports has passed its final stage in Parliament. However, this has raised concerns over the impact on producers' businesses. Estimates are showing that the projected reduction in food production resulting from one of the wettest winters on record could be nearly 10%. No surprises there. And three men, Joe Miller from North Wales, James Callaghan and Connor Waring from Chester, have been ordered to pay over £1,000 in fines as they were sentenced following hare coursing offences in East Yorkshire last November. So amongst the great and the good at number 10 last week was Farm Safety Foundation Chief Exec Stephanie Barclay. We'll hear about the Farm to Fork Summit in a minute, Stephanie. But first, though, Tuesday sees the annual conference for those yellow wellies. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, Steve. Well, Tuesday is going to be an opportunity for us to, first of all, celebrate our 10th anniversary. But we're going to do it with a bit of meaning. So we are bringing 120 farmers, government ministers, farming leaders and farm businesses together under the one roof to talk about farm safety and mental health and what we're going to do about it. I mean, imagine 10 years ago being able to say that you could get those people under the one roof, which shows how much has changed over the past decade.
Well, I think you would have got them under one roof, but probably not to talk about farm safety.
That's probably very true. And they certainly wouldn't have been talking about mental health either. But it's amazing. Here we are 10 years later and they're willing to come. They're travelling to Solihull in Warwickshire and they're going to explore, discuss, debate, argue if they have to. But hopefully they're all going to leave with a sense of purpose and actually a realisation that it's not just one person's job to change our records. It's actually everybody's job and they need to understand and realise what their own responsibility is.
What's the format of the day, Stephanie?
We will have a keynote address from the Minister, Sir Mark Spencer, who's been very supportive. And then we're going to be very excitingly breaking the group up into three different groups. One group will go to a farm safety panel and one will go to a mental health panel. And the third will basically be going to what we're calling the farmers market. And those are all the fantastic rural charities out there. And those organizations that are involved in improving education, like TIA and Easy ATV Guys, and also Lantra, who offer specialist training in terms of the farm safety. And then we've got REBI, FCN, Rural Support from Northern Ireland, and different people in Samaritans. So we're giving every single person an opportunity to A, sit at the farm safety panel, B, go to the mental health panel, and C, meet the people that can actually support them in the work going forward.
And when you're doing these breakout groups, these panel groups, do they then report back to the whole conference on what they've discussed?
Yes. So it won't be the same panel discussion every time. So we've got Joe Stanley, who will be chairing the farm safety panel. We've Adam Henson, who'll be chairing the mental health panel. And we've got fantastic representatives. They aren't always the same people. So they're new people that are going to be talking about the issues and their learnings. For example, in the farm safety panel, we have the Northern Ireland Farm Safety Partnership represented. We have AgriKids from the Republic of Ireland. We've got Wayne from HSE. And in terms of the mental health panel, we have academics. We've also got Alex Ritchie from Farm Strong Scotland, which is fantastic new initiative that they have, which is about turning conversations into the positive, because there's an awful lot of negative talk around farm safety and mental health at the minute. But we need to talk about the positive elements of it. The fact that farmers are resilient, farmers are optimistic. If they weren't optimistic, they wouldn't be planting seeds, you know, every year.
Oh, that's very true.
Three times, let's be honest.
It's obviously going to be a busy day. Are places still open? Is it full now, or can somebody just turn up? What's the rule?
Yeah, we would prefer if they didn't turn up. If somebody was really keen to join us, I'm sure we would squeeze them in. So they could contact us through our website and just send an inquiry through the website or through our social media at Yellow Wellies UK if they're really keen to join us.
And of course, importantly, we must point out, just in case somebody's not seen the email, there is a change of venue. There was a fire, I gather, at the original venue.
I think this was a challenge on our how resilient we are as a charity, because 2 weeks before the event, we got a phone call to say that there had been a kitchen fire, thankfully not serious and thankfully nobody hurt, but the venue is unusable. So we had to go looking for a venue. We've got a fantastic new venue, which is the Voco St. John's in Solihull.
Fantastic. Well, they came to the rescue at the 11th hour, really, and I'm sure it'll be a brilliant day. Looking forward to that enormously. And I'll be reporting back for the farming programme next week. Now, earlier in the week, you got your posh frock on and went down to number 10 Downing Street for the second Farm to Fork Summit.
Yeah, well, basically the day was, as you said, the second one that they've done, and it's brilliant. I really hope if there is a change of government, then that they continue to do that, because it's a wonderful opportunity for ministers who maybe aren't coming from a farming background to talk to farmers and understand what the challenges are, to workshop different issues that there might be, but also to network with each other. So there were representatives from the farming unions from England, Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales. Over, we were all queuing at the same time to get in. So I was shoulder to shoulder with Abby Reader from NFU Cymru, who, like me, name wasn't on the original list, but then they went and got the right list and we got in, which was a bit of a relief. But it was a great opportunity for us all to get together, but also talk to people like Steve Barclay, to talk to Sir Mark, to, you know, to talk to George Eustace, all of those guys that are in the halls of power, and let them know what were our key issues, what were our big asks. And it was a really positive event to do. Obviously, it's going to have been good PR for the government. But at the end of the day, it's the voter that decides what happens, and they'll vote as they see fit. But it was a great thing to be involved in, actually.
So it's worthwhile. Did anything concrete come out of the day? Were there any announcements, or was anything said that you can think, that's new?
Yeah, they did. They actually announced various things. The one, obviously, that I was interested in was their announcement. They had announced they were going to offer some support to charities that were going to be working with farmers in disadvantaged areas, uphill farmers, for different initiatives about supporting mental health. So they had I think they've awarded money to LRSN, the Lincolnshire Rural Support Network, who are an amazing bunch of people, as you know. And Yana as well received some money, and the Farming Network, or the Farmer Network, I think, or that they're called, they received some money too.
Do you think that the Farm to Fork Summit is more than just a talking shop? Is it worthwhile?
I think it's worthwhile. It's not costing an awful lot of money. You know, we all go there at our own expense. You get a glass of Schlur, you know, and a cocktail sausage, and it's lovely. You know, and we do that at our own expense because we think it's worthwhile doing. It's also good for visibility, you know, and it was quite nice to see various elements of it, the diversity of the people that were in the room. You had young people who were influencers who obviously you can have that immediate hit, you know, by if them sharing it on their TikTok or their Instagram. I was talking to an MEP. I was talking to a fantastic farmer, David Brooks, and he was part of you may remember there was a campaign that he wanted to get defibrillators on farms. Even sitting chatting to him, you know, there's fire in his belly and it's been ignited again because he's going, no, this is a really good thing to do. I'm going to keep it going. So there are things like that. I'm like, you know what? If I can help you, I'm going to help you. So because I believe, yes, that's, you know, the health and safety side of things as well. So it's an important element, which put some ideas in my head for this year's Farm Safety Week. So yes, it's worthwhile doing. It's not costing anybody anything, you know, so except for a bit of time.
Let's just hope, as you say, if there is to be a change of government, this will continue in some form after the election. Stephanie, look forward to seeing you on Tuesday.
You will indeed probably stand at the front door welcoming you.
It's getting towards time for the first grass cut of the year. With the weather we've had, we're being advised to be gentle with the sward to start with. Barenbrugg's agricultural manager, Janet Montgomery, has more. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good, thank you. Welcome to the farming programme. Barenbrugg is urging farmers who are coming up to cutting or doing their first cut of grass to go slowly, to take it easy. Can you explain a little bit more as to why we should be a bit careful this year?
What we're urging people to do is go gently and just have a quick think about things before you rip into that delicious, finally present first bite of grass. What we are encouraging people to do, it has been incredibly wet. We all know that. It is starting to dry up now, and it's amazing to me always how it does actually dry up in good time when given the chance. So what we're encouraging farmers to do is just, the grass looks fantastic. It's very tempting to go out and cut as soon as it's ready. And I often encourage that. We're just encouraging people to make sure the ground is dry enough to be able to handle the machinery and it's not going to cause any compaction or rutting or soil structure issues for the future.
Okay, so before we look at what we should do, what's the problem? Rather than doing what we might normally do of rushing onto the field and hacking away and cutting it down nice and low, why is that a problem?
I mean, we want to preserve the quality of our soil structure. When the soil is wet, it's a little more prone to damage, and that can have a long-lasting effect. Getting on 2 days faster can have quite a knock-on effect to the yields you get from your silage this year and next year and into the future. So it's very hard to preach patience, for my own self included, but it is often worth it. From a plant point of view, it can be that leaving the extra time to wait for the fields to dry out means you have quite a heavy crop of grass. So what we're encouraging is don't cut too low, because the grass, ryegrass in particular, keeps its carbohydrate storage reserves in about the bottom 5 or 6 centimeters of the plant. If you cut into that bottom 5 or 6 centimeters, it takes a lot of energy for the plant to regrow its green material. So if you cut low, not the end of the world, just make sure the field has long enough to recover afterwards. However, if you leave the plant its carbohydrate reserves, it's more resilient as a population, regrowth is faster, and you get into that second cut with higher quality and a little bit faster as well.
Because they always say that for people's gardens, don't they? The first time you cut after the winter, don't go trimming it really, really down low. Just take the top off.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see once you've cut for silage, if the field is really, really white, there's no photosynthetic ability left, you've cut down into those reserves. Just ensure the field has long enough to recover itself.
What's the best thing for a farmer to do? First thing first, you're saying to make a thorough assessment of the field. What's the best way to do that?
Often, the best way to assess is to walk it. By my own self, drive past. When you're familiar with your own fields, you know how they look when they're wet or when they're dry. It still makes a big difference to walk through. You don't have to do the whole field, but even just in past the headland, see what the soil is actually doing. Does it stick to your boots? Do you make a deep footprint? What's happening in there? Rather than making a guess out the truck window, which all of us do, but when we're preaching patience, then take the time. It's worth it.
Okay. And as far as the equipment is concerned, I'm thinking of the weight of some of the equipment getting onto a soggy field.
Yes. Just bear in mind how heavy your equipment is. And if it's possible to do lighter, more freely draining fields first, come to the heavier fields later. If it's possible to use lighter equipment to stick to just the headlands, if you need to bring heavy equipment in to limit the amount of damage to the field, all those sorts of things. There's many, many people on earth who are much more knowledgeable about machinery than I am. But really what we're trying to do at the end of the day is, regardless of what machinery is available to you, we're trying to preserve the soil structure.
Okay. And be very careful with your cut height.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah.
If somebody's not sure about this, can they get advice? Could they talk to you guys? What should they do?
Absolutely. We at Barenbrug all love to talk about grass. I adore talking about grass. And situations exactly like this, we are more than happy to talk over with farmers, land managers, whoever needs some more knowledge around it. Very, very happy to have the discussion.
And of course, you will be at shows like Groundswell this year.
Yes, absolutely. Our next one coming up is Grass and Muck in Aberystwyth, and we'll be at Groundswell as well. Massively looking forward to them.
If somebody did want to get hold of you, where should they go?
Probably the easiest is the Contact Us section of our website. The Meet the Team is all there, so you can find who your local rep is and who the best person is to get in contact. Our details are all there.
All right, Janet, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the Farming Programme.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
The brilliantly effective and supportive Lincolnshire Rural Support Network, LRSN, are celebrating their 25th anniversary this year. Head of charity Amy Thomas is here with an update. You've had a busy old year, haven't you?
Yeah, we have had a busy old year. Things have been surprisingly busy. We've just closed off our casework for the end of the last financial year, so at the end of March, and we found we've supported 248 families, and that's compared to 216 in the previous year, which had felt like a particularly busy year in itself. So yeah, times are busy, and I think they're going to continue to get busier.
You've seen an increase from last year. There's quite distinctly possible you'll see an increase again, do you think?
I think we will. I do think we will. We carried forward a huge amount more live cases in April than we do normally, at about 50% more cases than we would normally. So that already sets us up for a busy year. Speaking to farmers sort of across the county, you know, their crops are months behind. We don't know how that's going to affect their yields. You know, it there's just lots of added pressures at a time when farmers were already feeling the pressure, really. And we're also kind of, as we head into summer, heading into what can be quite a sort of long and lonely hours, and I think we are likely to continue to see people needing us.
Well, we'll give out the details of how to contact you at the end if somebody is sat there thinking, yeah, I could do with a bit of help. And you've had loads going on with things like the farming conference, International Women's Day, been walking the Viking Way for Alan Robson and fundraising, new volunteers, but you've said goodbye for the second time to one of your key volunteers, haven't you?
Yeah, well, we've actually said goodbye to Alison Pratt, who is was on our staff team, and Alison was a fantastic member of the team, and we already miss her, and she only just retired, but she is still going to be with us, so she's continuing to do a little bit of volunteering here and there, which is really lucky. But yeah, she's going to be sadly missed by everybody, but we have now got two new members of the staff team, which is amazing, who are Alice and Lou, who are one who's picked up where Alison left off, and then Alice, who's kind of taken on corralling the health huts, which is amazing, amongst other bits and pieces.
And they are so important, aren't they, the health huts? People have really taken to them, haven't they? I don't know whether you thought at the start that a lot of farmers might go, oh, no, I don't think I'm going to try that. But loads of people have, haven't they?
Yeah, I definitely thought when we started out with it that it might be a little bit more of a job to twist arms and get people through the door, particularly when you're in such a kind of open public environment, you know, to show or a sale or a seed trial. But actually, we have them queuing up and we have no problems at all, which is fantastic. And it really is testament to the fact that our volunteers are outside chatting to people about what it involves. And I think it's not only are people keen to kind of look after their health, but I think they do it to support LRSN as well, because they know that it's important to us to see people through the door, and that only by ensuring that it's popular and it's well used can the service continue. So big thank you to the people who go through the door, really, for helping us sustain that. But we've definitely been really busy with the health hut, and we kind of aim for around 22 events every year. We've probably done more than that already, and we're getting a good range of events as well. But this is heading into busy season for the health hut, with May, June and July, with shows, with seed trials, with all sorts of things. So our nurses are going to be well and truly ready for a break by the end of the summer, I think.
And of course, Lincolnshire Show, not that far away now.
No, not at all. It's come around very quickly this year, I think. We're really excited. We'll have our own stand again and we'll be there with the health hut. We tend to take two nurses on each day so that we can see lots of people, which is fantastic. And this year we're celebrating our 25th year, which I know you know. So we're going to have lots of focus on that as well at the show.
Yeah. So what's coming up for the rest of the year?
So for the summer period, we're going to be doing a summer challenge, which we'll be launching at the show. That's aimed at, we'll have two, one aimed at younger children and one aimed at teens, really sort of encouraging young people to be active, because that's really important part of mental health and well-being, but also to connect with each other and connect with their families and the people around them, acts of kindness, bits and pieces like that, really. So we'll be launching that at the show, and that'll be running throughout the summer. As you say, we've got 25th year, so we can have a volunteers picnic in September, and busy planning through to the rest of the year with other bits and pieces. The events that we've done so far, the social events, have been really popular. So we've done quizzes and pie and peas and bits and pieces at breakfasts at the market. So we would definitely like to revisit some of those.
I think it's testament to the work you do, your predecessors do, and how needed the service is, that here we are celebrating 25 years.
I know. I'm sure when, actually Alan Robson, who set us up right at the beginning with a band of trustees, would never have imagined how much it's grown. And, you know, it's wonderful that we are seeing more people reach out for support, because I hope that means that more people are aware. But I'm certain equally that there are an awful lot of people who still perhaps aren't aware of us, or perhaps still haven't thought about how we might be able to support them. And there's more to be done, I think.
Just very, very quickly, 30 seconds for those who may not be aware, what kind of services do you offer?
So we've mentioned the health screening. So we have our nurses who will do just general health checks for you, blood pressure, blood sugar, cholesterol, that kind of thing, at the market at Louth, at Melton Market, and at Spalding Horticultural Auction, as well as on the health hut, which we've spoken about. But we do provide quite comprehensive one-to-one support. So on all sorts of different issues, it really doesn't matter what you come to us with. We do a lot of mental health support, but we also do a lot around finance and debt and business and tenancy and animal health and, you know, sort of legal bits, all sorts of things, really. The way to access that is either through our helpline, which runs 8 to 8 every single day of the year, or just by giving one of the staff members a call or popping us an email, really. Whatever it is that is causing you or a member of the farming, agricultural, horticultural community stress or concern, then we are there to sort of be a listening ear and walk alongside you and try and help you navigate those challenges.
And would you say if somebody's got a problem, even if they're not sure whether you can help, contact you? And if you can't help for whatever reason, I'm sure you'll be able to point them in the right direction.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Contact us. If we don't know, we will definitely know someone who will know, and we will be able to make that connection for you. In quite a lot of cases, we do sort of bridge the gap between ourselves and other service providers, and work really closely with other charities and with NHS and other sort of statutory providers across the county. So yeah, if you're not sure, give us a ring, because if we can't help, we'll definitely know someone who can.
Brilliant. So just quickly then, the website address and that phone number.
Yeah, the website is lrsn.co.uk and the helpline is 0800 138 1710.
Amy Thomas, head of charity at LRSN, have a great second half of your 25th anniversary, and thanks for joining us on the farming programme this morning.
Thanks, Steve.
Time for a walk through the fields, hand in hand with our crop doctor, Sean Sparling. He's got a crop report and some timely agronomy advice for us. Morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Steve. Another wet week again this week, just for a change. Mind you, we needed that rain, and we're going to need to keep needing spells of wet weather over these coming weeks if the crops we put in the ground this spring are going to fulfil that potential. And let's face it, they really do need to fulfil that potential this year. Hopefully things settling down a bit now. They soon need to. The Septoria tritici and the rust, both yellow and brown in these winter wheats, have been having a lovely time so far this spring. Septoria in particular doesn't take any finding, but the biggest areas of concern should now be how high up the plant it's got, what you put on at T1, how long it's been since T1, what growth stage the crops are at, what your varieties are, and when you're going to be able to get that T2 on. Then you start to worry about how much and of what you're going to apply for T2. So, starting with winter cereals, and I said last week, winter barley is well into ear emergence now. Much more of the wet weather diseases this year, like rinko and net blotch, than last year. Bit of mildew about in the bottom of some of these lush, frothy canopies as well. So T2 recs have been stacked up waiting for a break in the weather since the beginning of the week. By the way, as far as application goes, don't forget that the stem and the awns and the ear itself are an important part of the yield management process in winter and spring barley. Do try and spray when it's not too hot. Below 22 degrees is safe. That minimises any risk of scorch in the awns, especially if you've got a few other bits and bobs in that mix. So look after the awns and the top of the crop. But with winter barley, don't forget the rest of the canopy, particularly leaves 4 and 5, way down there in the bottom of the thick canopy, because leaves 4 and 5 contribute a bit over 30% to the final yield in barley. As for the rest, the ears make an 11% contribution, the stems give 36%. So the stem and the ear contribute around 47% towards final yield. But unlike wheat, you've got to keep leaves 4 and 5 in the base of the canopy clean and green too, because they contribute 15 and 16% to the yield respectively. So 78% of the yield contribution in winter barley comes from the stem, the ear, the awns, leaves 4 and leaf 5. The flag leaf in barley only contributes a piddling 4%. You get around 7% from leaf 2 and about 11% from leaf 3. So just 33% contribution to yield from the ear and the top three leaves in barley. Quite the opposite in wheat, if you think about it, because in wheat, those top three leaves and the ear contribute around 95% to the final yield. We get 23% from the ear in wheat. Leaf 1 gives 43%, leaf 2 22%, leaf 3 7%. That's 72% of the yield contribution in wheat from the top three leaves, compared to just 22% for the same three leaves in barley. So it's absolutely crucial to keep the upper canopy clean in wheat, but equally important and often forgotten to maintain the health of leaves 4 and 5 down in the bottom of the canopy in a barley crop. So nozzle choice and maybe higher water volumes could help with that. T2 application conditions crucial in all crops, of course, to make sure we get good coverage and decent penetration where we need it. So do use an adequate water volume. You need to penetrate what are very thick canopies in the main this year in the winter barley. So almost as important as the product choice and the rate of that product in the T2 decision is going to be nozzle choice. That's vital, really. So chew your advisor's ears off over which nozzles are most efficient for you. They should know what's best for the job. You need to be able to carry that fungicide much further down into the canopy in winter barley than you do in your wheat, for all of those reasons. And remember, it's not all about how many hectares you can fit in the tank. It's about you getting the best result and the best return for your fungicide, which is now a very considerable expense, particularly after last year when things shot up about 20% on average. And although they have dropped back a bit this year, they still sit plenty high enough. New products out there, of course, Adepidin and Iblon in the market this year, bringing new levels of control to Septoria and Rust. And with the Inatrek and the Revisol that we've had for the last couple of years, we do have some good options. But do your sums, look at your varieties and just think about it. And if you add to that the fact you only get one go at getting that T2 choice and application right, it's clearly best to get it as right as you possibly possibly can on your first and only go. Way too late for growth regs, by the way, in most fields of wheat and barley now. So do make sure that you check any outstanding recommendations if you've still got growth regulators in them. Spring barley still getting its growth regs at T1 start to go on as we speak. Plenty of them already on, but a lot still to go on. Winter wheat T2 is well underway now. Higher levels of disease in the wheats as well than we're used to seeing. It's clearly been a very easy ride for the last couple of seasons disease-wise. I reckon this year there may not be many leaves left by Lincolnshire Show on some of those wheat crops, particularly where people cut their costs right back to tailor the fungicide spend to a budget. As I've been saying for a few weeks then, Septoria tritici and yellow rust have been having a lovely time out here in what has been perfect weather for Septoria and rust. Cool, wet, windy, and if you add into that the lush frothy wheats we now have, it really is Septoria go-go. Remember, it's all about what you did at T1 and how long ago you did it, because in a year like this, about 25 days is about as long an interval as you want to leave between that T1 and T2, even on the good varieties. So with virtually all of my flag leaves well out now, even in the later drillings, I'm on it and my T2s are sat there waiting to go and will imminently be underway. Adjust your product choice and your fungicide dose, as I've said, according to your varieties and the disease pressure out there. But saving a few quid by dropping dose rates to T2, I think could just be a very bad idea this season. Lots of disease about, good weather for it, and it looks unnervingly like it's under starter's orders to me. I'm still finding aphids at threshold in untreated sugar beet, so if you've got non-cruiser dressed beet, do keep your eyes open. Quite a lot of herbicide damage, by the way, this spring after that hot weather last week as well, being reported in beet crops from Lincolnshire and beyond our borders, particularly where herbicides have been applied to de-waxed or very small expanded cotyledon sugar beet plant. Wind, heat, hail, rain, all of those things will de-wax the crop. Sprays, of course, all contain surfactants. They all act on the wax layer as well. So it's a recipe for damage. And if applications have been made within 24 hours of any of those weather events, or the plants are too small, well, you get the picture. And that damage has been reported following so-called safe mixes as well, just as it is from the more caustic brews. So just be careful. Some talking about re-drilling their sugar beet already because of damage. Mind you, it has to be really bad to do that. I was always told that if you're down to as few as 35 or 40 plants to a chain, it should still be okay, especially where it's just the cotyledons that are scorched off and the middle's still growing. Sugar beet that's had the cotyledons eaten off by skylarks always recovers unbothered without being re-drilled. And anyway, half of a first drilling is always going to out-yield the full second drilling. Or so they say. Mind you, it's only been 3 weeks in the ground, then it's hardly lagging behind yet, is it? So I think it's more about the 240 quid or so per beet unit, additional seed cost plus the charges for drilling. So give it a chance to recover before you go and do a panicky redrill. This warm, wet weather and the warm, wet soil should see rapid improvements in these crops out there anyway. And if you do redrill sugar beet, remember that if it's failed cruiser, then you cannot redrill the same field with more cruiser dress seed. So do stay legal. So a bit of warm sunshine this week and we'll be off again. For now though, that rain was very, very welcome on my farm, so let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks as ever, Sean. Coming up, the Pig and Poultry Fair was back at the NEC last week. I went along and I'll be talking with some of the exhibitors with something new to show, along with the markets and weather.
The Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
This is the Farming Programme podcast. I'm Steve Orchard. The Pig and Poultry Fair was held at the NEC last week. Record numbers of visitors and exhibitors, quite a few of which had something new to show. So this week and next, we'll pick some and have a chat, starting with a system that supports early detection of potential respiratory disease in pigs. Gemma Stevenson at Boehringer Ingelheim. Talk us through it.
Okay, so SoundTalks is a new innovative AI technology that listens to the pigs from nursery through to finishing for signs of potential respiratory disease. So it's listening for coughing and other signs of respiratory disease, and also humidity and temperature in the room.
With this product, what problem are you trying to solve?
So the idea is to get early interventions and early kind of diagnostics of any potential diseases. So this kind of system would alert you potentially 4 or 5 days than we humans might notice it. So it picks, because it's in the room 24/7, no stockman, no pig farmer can be in a room 24/7. So the idea is it's picked up a lot earlier than we might see it.
And so how does it work?
So it listens, so it's got an algorithm that sits behind it, which has had years and years and years of data that's gone into it. And it basically, it's been taught different frequencies of pig coughing and pig sounds. So it ignores any sounds such as humans talking, doors banging, feed systems, but it only recognises coughing and signs of respiratory disease. Yeah.
So this is an AI thing?
It's an AI, yes, AI. So it's always learning, it's always improving.
Yeah. It sounds remarkably clever to me, and as you say, it's taking away that human involvement in the fact that they can't be there all the time listening. So one assumes it's an awful lot more accurate.
It is, and it kind of takes away the subjective and objective kind of learning. So obviously generally when we think we're quite objective when we go in and decision making, but actually we're quite subjective. So I might see something and act on it on day one, you might see something act on it on day three. Those 3 days count. So this machine is objective. It tells you need to go in this day, I found something, sort it out, intervene.
And is this a sort of big cumbersome thing, or is it sensors in the shed? What's the sort of practical setup?
Yeah, so they're monitors that hang in the pig shed. So they're only about 30 centimetres tall, and they have a light disc at the bottom of it. So they'll sit in the pig shed. Roughly one monitor does about 500 pigs, about 20 metre diameter, and they just plug and play. So it's a 3-pin plug, hang up, and then they mesh to each other. So if you've got 10 rooms, you can have 10 monitors, and they also talk to each other. Then they talk to a hub. The hub then takes all the data and makes it look pretty for us so that we can understand it.
Well, sounds so simple, doesn't it? How is this monitoring individual pigs, or is it basically saying the whole shed's got a problem?
Yeah, so it's monitoring the whole shed. So each monitor will do the 20 metres. So that's why we set protocols. So on day one, when it picks something up, it might say, go in, have a look. You know, can you visually see one pig maybe that's coughing a lot? And obviously that's your problem pig. But yes, it is overlooking the whole shed.
More info on that at soundtalks.com. Danagri 3S were at the fair showing their new automatic straw dispensing system. Here's sales director Mark Unit.
Basically, it's a system which has been developed in cooperation with two Danish companies, Funky, who manufacture material handling equipment and pig feeders, and Cormal, who do straw processing equipment, so they mill the straw down for bedding, or if it's made for pellets, etc. Basically, Cormal do the shredding part of it, Funky do the delivery side, and one of the more mundane jobs on the farm these days is to bed cattle, pigs, poultry, turkeys. There are quite a lot of applications for it. It's mundane in the fact it has to be done quite regularly, and getting people to do it is more and more awkward. So they've come up with this system which uses technology which has been around for 50, 60 years, but it's been developed for use with straw. Because there are a few things with straw where it doesn't move as easily, it's not quite as flowable. So develop the system whereby you have a set amount of distribution pieces set certain distances apart according to whether it's pigs, cattle or whatever. Say maybe 3 metres, 4 metres, 5 metres apart. The electric system can fill these dispensers every 2 hours, every 4 hours, whatever. So you're then able to release them and let the straw out so that the pig, the cattle, can scratch it around and almost bed itself without taking large machinery, noisy machinery, which tends to have an awful lot of dust and is a big labour. So it's a huge labour saving on a very mundane job.
So presumably somebody's just got to put straw in at the top and out it comes in a controlled manner at the bottom.
Correct. There's two ways. If you want to have the bale chopping system, you can put the bales on, it will chop the bales, fill the dispensers up. If you're buying in the straw already chopped, or if you're also using pellets or sawdust, the system can handle that as well. So you then feed it into a live mixer feed bin that keeps it moving and keeps it active. It feeds into the chain and disc and around to the feeders. And you can then program on the feeders or the dispensers whether you want to dispense once a day, twice a week, whatever, and it does it all automatically for you.
Want to know more? Head to danagri-3s.com. Thanks, Mark. Finally for this week, Ingrid Potter, Key Account Manager at MSD Animal Health, told me about their LEO technology for improving pork traceability.
What really sets LEO apart from other data management systems in the UK is we talk about individual pig traceability. So at the moment we tend to think of pigs as a herd of pigs or a batch of pigs. And what Leo allows us to do is actually have visibility of each single individual animal. So we know our consumers want to know exactly where their meats come from. This is a system in the industry that is going to allow that full traceability.
Okay, when you say customers, you're talking supermarkets, the end seller will be able to say, this pig came from where?
Absolutely. Even the people that eat meat, you know, people are shopping more smartly nowadays. They want to pick up a bit of meat and they want to know, they want to make that decision. You know, sometimes that is financially driven, but other people are actually looking to make sure that they're, first of all, is it British produced? Is it an outdoor reared? Is it outdoor bred? Now they will actually be able to find out which, where that's come from, what part of the country that pig's come from, if our retailers choose to share that data with them.
Okay. And how is it doing that?
It's really simple on the front of it. It's basically a tag that we put in each individual's ear, and you can simply scan that tag. And from the moment you scan that tag, you start collecting data from all different sources. So you start to look where this piglet came from, who was her mum, what's her sire line, where did she move from, was she cross-fostered, what vaccines was she given? Did she have to have any antibiotics? And that's really important when we talk about especially antimicrobial resistance, and we're looking to decrease the amount of antibiotics we use in the field. And that individual pig, we have all that visibility on.
It's fantastic that you can actually do that on the individual pig level rather than a whole herd.
Yeah, it's a real game changer. It's a real game changer for the industry.
Fascinating. Where could somebody go if they wanted more information about this?
Absolutely. Anyone who wants more information about this can either contact myself, I'm well known in the industry, just reach out to me, or else go onto our MSD Hub website and register your interest, and I'll be in touch.
Thank you, Ingrid.
Thank you for your time.
We'll have more new products from the Pig and Poultry Fair on next week's Farming Programme.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting with livestock, and from Masons Rural at Louth Market, auctioneer Ed Middleton. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Steve. This week, an increase in numbers in the prime cattle ring, with heifers this week all in average 271.49 pence per kilo, and steers averaged all in 289.5 pence per kilo. Top price in the steers this week came from J&S Brooks of Strubby at £1,765.95. And top price in the heifers were F.E. Reed and Son of Hemmingby at £1,712.85. Top price pence per kilo were again F.E. Reed and Son of Hemmingby with a heifer at 300.5 pence per kilo. Moving on to the sheep report, prime lambs, increased entry in prime lambs was just under 100 forwards. The SQQ this week was at 433.38 pence per kilo, with an all-in average pounds per head of £184.86. Top price this week came from Shaw Brothers of Binbrook at £201, and in the pence per kilo were R.I. Clough & Son of Holton Holgate at 460 pence per kilo. Moving on to the prime hogs, this week had an SQQ of 343.16 pence per kilo, and an all-in average pounds per head of £162.18. Top price this week came from Chamberlain Brothers of Market Raisin at £216, and top price in the pence per kilo came from AJ Colson & Sons of Market Raisin at 401 pence per kilo. Onto the store sheep, food store lambs about today, which topped at £107 for M. Hodgson & Son of Louth. And also we had a nice show of ewes and lambs again this week, topped at £94 per life, or £282 per outfit. Top price was £94 per life, which came from P. Fisher of Horncastle. Moving on to the cull ewes, an average this week of £124.80, with a top price this week from R. A. Harrison of Spilsby for a super pen of Suffolk ewes at £196. Shaw Brothers of Binbrook topped with a marvellous pen of half-bred ewes at 190 and 171. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Ed. And to the grain markets now with Openfield's Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. After last week's excitement, we have had a few steadier days. Not all is lost, certainly, but at the moment, there are lots of sellers and not many buyers. When this is the case, the safe haven is the futures market. And understandably, this has taken a step back with the volume of physical grain sold. Has the bubble burst and has the weather story disappeared? I personally don't think so. If you were to read the latest from a Russian analyst, I think you'd agree. They have lowered Russian wheat production in 2024 by 7.2 million tonnes. We could also add that 830,000 hectares in Russia have perished due to the frost. But this is news that has been around in the marketplace for a few days now. This is not new. As the saying goes, a bull market needs feeding, and without fresh news to feed it, it is understandable that it stops for breath. The shorts in the US market are getting smaller by the day, as panic sets in amongst some of them. If they need some direction, then look no further than the French market, which have turned a substantial short into a long position in a matter of weeks. How times change. Like all weather markets, we await the next development. If we were to see further downgrading of the Russian crop, or further weather issues in South America, or indeed a faltering in the progress of US corn establishment, this would feed the bulls, and it does feel that the bulls have the upper hand for the moment after several months of bearish tones. I don't think we change our view for a second. On old crop, we know we're going to run out of time, so quietly keep going. New crop, if you've taken enough cover, then sit back. If not, and you're a comfortable forward seller, then you are near the highs of the recent market, and there is nothing wrong with trading a little of the rise that we've seen. Looking at new crop, we know that we'll be importing either wheat or corn as the replacement. Whether we produce 9 million tonnes or 11 million tonnes, we're still importing, and we'll price against the cheapest alternative. If world wheat climbs, so will we, but we cannot forget that the slippery bit will be corn. This is by far the cheapest replacement today. Whilst we await some developments, let's finish with some guide numbers. They have just come off the top, but compared to a few weeks ago, we'd be rather pleased with the forward progress we have made. So, feed wheat, June 190 to 200, July 195 to 205, November 210 to 220, with Group 1 milling premium still holding at £60 to £70 for old crop. Feed barley, May 160 to 170, November 185 to 195. Oilseed rape, May 380 to 385, July 385 to 390, and November 400 to 405. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
A dry, sunny start to the week with a light northerly and highs in the mid-teens Celsius. Rain for the midweek, quite heavy on Tuesday, but drizzle for the second half of the week, and quite a bit of sun returning for next weekend. Winds gradually backing westerly, but staying light. Well, that's it for now. Next week, more shiny new stuff from the Pig and Poultry Fair, and I'll be reporting from the 10th Farm Safety Foundation Conference, and we'll have the rest of the week in agriculture. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.